time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN, Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and at WSMNradio.com. You can tune in on the internet. And we are really enjoying your donations, so we'd like to keep them coming. And in order to do that, you can write us a check to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to our private personal email, our private post office box at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write the check to Absolute Broadcasting and send it to Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. And if you'd like to know more, you can visit us at our website at www.israelisrealnh.com, israelisrealnewhampshire.com. And we are opening up the lines today. I'll repeat it again later. But our telephone for if you want to call in today is 603-816-1590. That's 816-1590. So do give us a call. And Boker Tov.
Hi, Boker Tov.
We've got a lot of people here today, which is a lot of fun all the time. But before we do that, we're going to start with our Hebrew word, which is?
Kabbalah.
Kabbalah.
And do you want to know what is this Kabbalah?
Of course.
Okay. So it's coming from the root Kuf Bet Lamed, which is the meaning is
sounds
to
like,
get, to receive,
like
or to obtain.
Sounds like Hebrew to me.
Always. So it's to get, to receive, or to obtain.
Mm-hmm.
But it have another meaning. And the Kabbalah is actually the essence of the wisdom. And this wisdom is no more and no less than a sequence of roots which hang down by way of cause and effect and fixed determined rules interwing to a single exalted goal described as the revelation of God, God lines to God's creatures and this world.
That is a mouthful, Sonia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if I got all of that.
Well, this is why we have somebody here that will enlightening us about Kabbalah.
That's right. So we're going to turn the definition over to our guest. And our guest today is Mr. Eitan Zeira, a good friend. I've known him for a while. Good morning, Eitan. And Eitan is actually Israeli born, and he's a Nashua, New Hampshire resident and a scientist by trade, who began his studies in the Kabbalah when he got a complete set of the Zohar, which we'll, I guess, find out what that is, for his 40th birthday. And we won't tell you how old he is today, but...
32.
32, right? And he also, today, in addition to being a scientist, he's facilitating discussions and group learning about the Kabbalah in the Nashua Hour area. So, Boker Tov, Eitan.
Boker Or.
It's... still a snowy day outside, but we were able to get out, dig out of that snow. So tell us, we're deeply entrenched in Kabbalah now. We heard Sonia's definition, but we have no idea what she was talking about. So can you give us a little bit of an idea of about the nature of what is this thing called Kabbalah?
Okay. Well, as Sonia correctly pointed out, Kabbalah means receiving. And in order to receive, you have to be open. And so it's not something that anybody would push on you. It's something that you have to accept yourself. So it's not a proselytizing kind of discipline or anything. The general precepts are think about a source, a source of everything, a source of energy. And that energy flows from that source throughout the universe and comes back to the source in a circle. Circle of energy, just like any scientific term of magnetism, electricity, all these have a source. Energy flows through and then comes back. That energy is flowing through everything, whether it's material, matter, people, plants. That energy affects us, and we affect that energy. Obviously, it's a circle. So as that energy flows from the source through us, it's affecting us, and we're affecting it. And if we learn that flow of energy, we're able to better conduct ourselves, interact with other people, and with the rest of the universe.
Are you enlightened there?
In the end of the day, yes.
Completely confused.
No, not confusing, but it's nice.
No, Kabbalah is a very beautiful, beautiful thing.
It did start, if we look a little bit historically, it did start with Moses. When Moses had gotten the Ten Commandments from God, at the same time, he was imbued with this understanding. He could actually see that energy. If you remember the Matrix, where he could see the walls, The same kind of idea where you can see those energies throughout the universe. And that understanding was transferred over to Aaron, and from Aaron to his children and so on in generations. Later on, it was put down to script. First book was written down at around the year 300. It was called the Book of Formation. And later on, the Zohar, around the year 1270, was actually put in a 26-volume form that really puts down all the understandings into rote, that explains how the interaction between people, between God, between nature happens, and how can we affect it and how it affects us.
That's a very big, big subject.
Yes.
And I imagine it requires a lot of long-term study.
Quite, absolutely. Yeah. Like anything else, any other subject, you can delve into different levels depending how deep you want to understand it. Everything in the world we sort of pick up superficially, and then we have an interest in something and we delve deeper and understand more of that subject, and Kabbalah is just like that.
And how you came to the study of the Kabbalah? What pushed you to this? What opened you to
so the thing that draws people to Kabbalah is to really understand better the essence of God, get a clearer understanding or a deeper understanding of God. And so even as a young person, as you grow up, we go through these stages of learning how to walk, how to talk, and then around 12 or 13, all of a sudden we wake up and you become this crazy teenager. And then later on, you get to a point in your 20s where you ask, is there more? Is there something else besides what I'm doing? And at that point, you start asking that question, and you hear around you, well, there's this thing called God, this whatever it is, whichever religion you happen to grow up in, it's some sort of a higher entity, and you start asking. So at that point, I started asking questions myself and started studying it, but I didn't really get heavily into it until I was 40, when I got the entire volume of the Zohar for my 40th birthday.
Which is actually traditionally, if I understand it correctly, the sages always said that you shouldn't actually embark in the study of Kabbalah until you're 40. Is that correct?
That is correct. I'll say in the beginning, yes. Mm-hmm. And the main reason is, you can imagine you starting to study these esoteric things, and if you're in your 20s and you're just building your life, it's not the right time to do it. You need things that anchor you, like kids and mortgage and various things that will say, oh, I got to go to work. I can't stay in this hyperspace forever. And so just a point in your life that allows you to really be grounded so you can sort of fly like a kite a little bit, but then come back to Earth. The other thing is life's experience, and Kabbalah is more of an experiential thing. You have to actually experience it within yourself in order to understand that it's true. It's not like you can't learn swimming by correspondence. You have to jump in and figure out how to swim. It's the same idea. You have to experience it. And as you get older, you can rely on some experiences that allow you to understand that it's real for you.
I just want to say that we're speaking with Eitan Zaira about the Kabbalah, And if you have any questions you want to call in, our number is 603-816-1590, 603-816-1590. And Eitan Zier is talking about Kabbalah.
I'm wondering who are the person which are going for Kabbalah studies? No.
I've
What's
had
the profile?
Yeah, that's very good. I've had different classes for about 10, 12 years now, and it's interesting that people that are drawn to it are people that either have very deep questions about their existence or have felt something that was jarring and wanted an explanation. And so as we go into classes, after a few weeks with a person, all of a sudden they open up and they say, I had this experience, supernatural experience, and they're looking for an explanation through these studies. Others are saying, who am I and why am I here? Kind of looking
what
for...
What is the goal of me?
So those are maybe...
What is really interesting, you are a scientist
yeah.
and from the other hand, you are going with the Kabbalah. Hmm. Somebody from the outside will say impossible to go together because, you know, the rational thought and it's, how do you say, cannot work together. And how it's working?
So
and why it's working?
So there's a saying that things that are sufficiently technologically advanced will appear to us like magic. Right? And so if you look at what we've seen so far in our existence as a human society, various advances that now allow us to understand things that 500 years ago we couldn't understand. The idea of a force, gravity, magnetism, something that affects another thing from a distance. 500 years ago would have been magic, right? If you look at a lot of these things, the rabbis of the 12th century said that by the end of the second millennia, even kids will understand Kabbalah. They said that. I'm still amazed that they said that. And if you think about it, it's true because in order to understand these energy flows and forces, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, we couldn't understand that. But now we can because you talk to a first grader and they know, gravity. They know what it is. They can't touch it, but they know what it is, right? And so that's not very far from science.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And another question, sorry. And the other question is, do you have any explanation how our ancestors knew this unbelievable theory?
No. I'm amazed that they did, and if you think about it, if you are connected to this vision that you can actually see it, then you're seeing a truth that is immemorial, right? And so they saw something that was truth that was then and truth that is now.
Yes.
So.
Rachel.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that I teach very young children, fourth graders, and we do the study of what is holiness, what is God, and things like that. And they really get it today. I mean, it amazes me
right.
how much they really know. And, you know, and one of them, for example, says, well, I said, you know, he explained to me really all of this deep mystical theories. And I said, how do you know all of that? And he said, well, I watch Nova.
There you go.
So, but it was, you know, the combination of where, I mean, even today, huge, I'll call them celebrities, but, you know, like Stephen Hawking, things, you know, people like that are debating the existence of God and whether, you know, God and science mesh or connect and, you know, how can you, and, you know, the study of creationism versus what's it called, the evolution, you know, and they don't connect. I don't know. In my opinion, I think they do. And I think, you know, what Sonia was asking, you know, how do you make that connection between science and the spiritual kind of aspect?
Well,
do you see, you know, you're doing it, right? And
Kabbalah is a way of life. But if the way I look at it is that creation did happen, but evolution is part of it. It was created that way. And so you could, in essence, say that Adam and Eve had a tail, and then later on they evolved into Homo sapiens.
I think we're going to get in trouble here.
The perfection of creation is the ability for it to change and perfect itself, which is evolution. There's nothing wrong with that.
I agree. But before we get into any well, if anybody wants to jump into the conversation, again, it's 603-816-1590, 603-816-1590. You mentioned that Kabbalah is a way of life. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So think about this flow of energy going from the source, which we call God, through all of us, and then back to God. So you get, we got this Bible, the Torah, which is in Hebrew. With it came a bunch of commandments. Kabbalah explains why those commandments are. When that energy flows through you, imagine a fluid flowing through a cylinder or through a pipe. You get turbulent flow. That turbulent flow is caused by you, your imbalances of your own energies. If you follow the commandments, an example, one of them is to do good unto others. That energy flows through you to another person, requires more energy. And so God or the universe allows that energy, your pipe grows, so more energy flows. And it's reflected in that good feeling that you have when you help another person. Your energy doubles because it has to sustain you and another person, and you did a good deed. Right. The other thing is eating kosher, as an example. The reason for that is because a healthy mind and a healthy body, you need to have good sort of nourishment in order for that energy to flow freely through your body. And so there is an explanation for all the commandments that God has given us that can be translated into this flow of energy that that permeates the universe.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, I like it. The mind feeds the body feeds the mind, and it helps us grow.
Yep. Yeah. Now, the energy that flows through God is too intense. It's like you being close to the sun, you will burn up. You have to go through various filters in order to look at the sun. You can't look at it directly. So these filters, there's actually in the Kabbalistic traditions, there's 10 filters in which it diminishes the energy so you can absorb. And if you know from the Bible, it says, no man can see me and live. And it is because that energy is in the proximity. I'm not talking about physical proximity, but spiritual proximity to God would just basically swallow you up. You would, in essence, what we would call die. And so these different filters, 10 different filters, they come in.
In Hebrew, they're called spherot.
They're called spherot, mm-hmm. That's right. And they come in pairs, so it's 5 pairs. And they're balances of energies. So as an example, one pair of energies would be mercy and judgment. Those are opposites that are complementary. And they're, so you can look at it as a filter or as a sphere around that allows us to first of all accept that energy in an amount that we can handle, but also give us different balances. So all of us have different levels of those 10 aspects, and some of us are imbalanced one way, others are imbalanced another way, but we're all imbalanced. And by the way, that's why we're here, to create or fix that, create a better balance in ourselves.
What do you mean by we're here? You mean we're here
alive.
Alive in
in a body.
In a body. Mm-hmm.
So the meaning is when we are having this balance, we are disappearing?
You go to a higher level. So there's seven levels.
Thing is, stay unbalanced. If you want this life, stay unbalanced.
If you want this miserable existence, absolutely. If you want to get to a higher level, you will come back. And so there is reincarnation.
Okay.
And so when you get to a certain level, you go to a higher existence. If you don't fix that balance, you'll come back in the same position of imbalance.
But not
that
lower.
That gives you the opportunity. So you're okay with that. So you want to keep that imbalance.
I don't want to be a dog, you know? That's it.
Fair enough.
Higher, I don't mind. I don't want to go lower.
Yeah, that's fair.
And imbalanced, you're okay with.
Yes, of course, because this is what it's making life colorful.
Yeah. Now, there is a commonality. If you hear what I've been saying, there's a commonality with Buddhism, with
right.
a number of religions. And so it's interesting that they come out separately, and therefore there's a common to all of us, or have they taken from each other? And that I don't know, but it's interesting to know that there is this similarities to all the faiths.
Yeah, George is giving us the finger. he's giving us the sign. We're going to go to a break, and I just want to say that we're speaking with Eitan Zaira about the Kabbalah. And anyone who wants to call in, it's 603-816-1590. We're Israel is Real, WSMN 1590, on your AM dial. Hey, this is Israel is Real, coming to you on WSMN 1590 and also on WSMNradio.com. We'd like to remind you that it's important to plant trees in Israel, and if you want to do that, you would go to www.jnf.org. That's Jewish National Fund, jnf.org, if you want to help replant trees in Israel after the fire that happened. The patent and trademark law firm of Vern Main and Associates is a local firm with a global practice, and it's pleased to announce its new office location at 547 Amherst Street in Nashua and on the web at www.vernmain.com for professional legal counseling on all intellectual property matters. Contact the legal specialists at Vern Main and Associates at their offices on 547 Amherst Street in Nashua. That's 547 Amherst Street in Nashua, New Hampshire. Or you can contact them on the web at vernmain.com. That's www.vernmaine.com. Vernmain.com.
Vision. Did you know that Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know that Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? And did you know what are the religious majorities in countries around the world? For example, 56 countries are Islamic, 49 are Roman Catholic, 20 are Protestant, 12 are Eastern Orthodox, 4 are Hindu, and 1 is a Jewish state. to receive Visions emails alert and be informed about Visions educational activities and opportunities, please visit Visions website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.nh4israel.org.
We'd like to announce the coming of a very important film, a documentary film that will be screened on February 8th in Boston, and it's called Iranium, or Iranium, as however you want like to say that. Iranium is a documentary film that exposes the threats posed to the United States and the world by a nuclear Iran, and it will premiere on February 8th at the AMC movie theaters and community centers nationwide. The film will be premiere in Boston on February 8th at 7 o'clock p.m. at the AMC Lowe's Boston Common, which is at 175 Tremont Street, which is part of this film's nationwide launch. It's co-sponsored by Act for America, Americans for Peace and Tolerance, Christians and Jews United for Israel, Christians United for Israel, the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, which is also known as CAMRA, Congregation Or Yisrael, Doc Emet Productions. We are also co-sponsoring that, Israel is Real, the Republican Jewish Coalition, the Russian Jewish Community Foundation, Voice of Israel of New Hampshire, which is also Vision, which you just heard about, many people sponsoring this film, two members of the Confederation of Iranian Students, and that is, and I'm not going to say this particularly right, but it's Sayavash Sartipi and Parya Ahangari, are set to speak at the event. CIS, this Confederation of Iranian Students, is the largest international Iranian student movement with over 7,000 members in 13 countries, which strives to empower the Iranian people in their struggle for freedom. Iranium will also be made available for free online streaming on February 8th for the first 50,000 registrants. So if you'd like to purchase tickets or to register for the online streaming, you need to visit the website, which is www.iraniumthemovie.com. That's IranIumTheMovie.com. And we're going to be speaking next week with the director, Mr. Alex Trayman. So do tune in to Israel is Real next week. We will be having an actual interview about this movie. So again, for more information, visit www.iraniumthemovie.com, IranIumTheMovie.com. And I know we have a lot of announcements today. One more announcement is that I, Rachel, will be performing at locally for a fundraiser called lovehopeandstrength.org, lovehopestrength.org. I'll be performing on tomorrow night, January 29th, at the Jam Factory in Manchester. That's 1211 Elm Street. It's a fundraiser for the cause of Love, Hope, Strength, which is a bone marrow transplant cancer treatment cause, which was actually founded by musicians themselves. So appearing will be Slang of Ages, Vintage Gold Muse, which is my other name, Andy O'Brien, Chris Dembro, and Mark Kupko. There's no cover charge for the concert, but as a fundraiser, we invite you to come and be prepared to either donate, get a swab, to see if you're a match, or make a donation. Again, the website is lovehopestrength.org, one word. That's a 21-plus concert, by the way. And we are going to come back in a minute.
Ashrei maskil, Ashrei maskil, Eldad. Ashrei Maskil, Ashrei Maskil.
And this is Israel is Real. I'm Rachel. And we're the Free Voice for Israel, coming to you on WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and also on the internet at WSMNradio.com. We're speaking today with Eitan Zaira about the Kabbalah, or Kabbalah as sometimes it's known as. You can join us in the discussion if you like. You can dial into 603-816-1590. That's 603-816-1590. And shalom again, Eitan. Boker tov. And Sonia, you were deep in thought there.
Yes, I was very suspicious speaking about Kabbalah on the radio. And speaking about the 10 spheres, I want to hear, how can I balance myself?
Mm. First of all, you have to want to, right? So Kabbalah in its root and its meaning is receiving. If you're running around busy doing your everyday life, you don't notice half the stuff or 90% of the stuff. You sit quietly around and you look around and you'll start noticing things you haven't noticed while you were busy doing them. And so the first thing is you have to be open and you have to want it. Nobody can force you or convince you. And that's why it's called, in its definition, Kabbalah. So it's something that, first of all, there's got to be a need inside of you that wants it, that is open to it. The imbalance is not necessarily the first thing that you would focus on. The first thing is the quietness to just see and just perceive.
In kind of meditation.
Exactly. A slowing down of observing and noticing the essence of the fixing for your life is to really, it's a lifelong journey. It's something that you were born with it, or it's from a previous incarnation, as they would say, that you would work on throughout your life. To really understand the Sefirot, you need to study them, and then you need to actually experience them. So you got to experience, what is it unmitigated mercy? What is it unmitigated judgment? What does it feel like to be in Netzach, which is winning? You got to win.
Yeah.
And Hod, which is you got to sit back and let it take you in. So those opposing Netzach and Hod are where you want to build a house, you want to fix, you want to climb, you want to win. And the other one, you sit and you absorb and you appreciate and you marvel. Those are the other two opposites. And start learning how to feel those, experience those in yours, and study that. And then as time goes by, you will notice how you lean toward one or another. Imagine a river or a wind. And your imbalance is like a plywood board that you're holding in front of you. Mm-hmm. If you have a left tilt, the wind is going to start pushing you to the right. If you have a left tilt, that wind is going to push you to the left, right? And so in life, you see people that keep tending to the left or to the right, or they're every time they get into an argument with somebody, or because of that imbalance, it gets them to act in a certain way to react to that constant flow.
It makes sense. It makes sense. I'm starting to balance myself. No, but it's really interesting. It's really interesting. And by the way, what are the average ages of people which are coming over to learn?
50s type, and you know, mid 40s to late 50s. I've had some that were much older, but it was shorter. The people that really stay are the middle age people, 40s, 50s. I did do a class to high school kids to just introduce, and the basic message was that I'd like you to know of something that is worthwhile to look forward in the future. You got to go to college now, you got to get a degree, you got to get a job, you build your life, but know that there is something out there
waiting
for you. And it was such an opening for a lot of them, because at the time you're looking for something, but you don't have time to look at it. to really look at it. And so it really worked out very well with high school kids. And they had to be at least 16 or 17.
To have abstraction and also 15, the philosophy, yes. Not
even close,
they,
you know.
They need
and so from 16 to about 18, 19, some of them actually came back and they wanted to study a little more. And I said, here's some books for you to read, but concentrate on your vocation right now. That's your, really what you need to do now.
Tell us a little bit about the Zohar.
Okay.
So
the Zohar is a book. It's like a commentary book. And if you know the Talmud or the Mishnah, it's...
I don't know if all our listeners do, if you could just give a brief explanation.
So we have the Bible. The Bible, according to our tradition and beliefs, was given at Mount Sinai. And then there is associated books that go with it about the prophets, Samuel and the other later prophets. And people later on, starting the year about maybe 500 BC, started explaining what's the meaning behind some of the sentences, explaining a little more about details. When you're not supposed to work on the Sabbath, does that mean you can't walk over to your neighbor's house? Does it mean you can't walk to the next village? And so they got into the details of what each of those sentences mean. And that's called the Talmud and the Mishnah. The Zohar came later, which gave explanations of why, rather than how, those mitzvahs were put into place. And all the interplay of the stories of Jacob fighting with Esau, of Joseph being sent to Egypt, all these stories, the plots that we have going on in the Bible, is explained in the spiritual realm as to what these stories are all about and why they were put there. And what's the interplay of the Sefirot in each of these plots? And that's what the Zohar is. So it's got a sentence from the Bible and then a bunch of commentary that explains the behind the scenes of that plot.
So I want to clarify that, in addition to maybe reaching a certain age and having a certain amount of experience, life experience, it seems to me that it might be important also to have a certain amount of knowledge about the Bible and the sources and things like that before you jump into the study of Kabbalah. Is this true or not?
That's very true. And it depends on the level that you're delving into it. So on the surface, you can read books about it. They're very good books by Arya Kaplan, by Daniel Matt, who really give you an introduction. You don't need to learn to be a learned man of the Bible or the Talmud or any of that. But as you get deeper and deeper into it, what becomes evident is that a lot of the messages that were sent through what's called hints. And a hint is, if you read a certain passage in one part of the Bible and it says something, and then you read in another book later on, and that word or that passage is said in a different way, those connections give you a hint as to what the deeper meaning is. And that's called remez, which is part of the levels of understandings that we have of the written scripture. And so to really delve into the depth of it, you really need to know, you need to be well-learned in the Torah and the Talmud and all those.
Well, I guess you need to know the references of, what it's referring to, what it's talking about. So you need to have some kind of background, as with anything, I would guess.
Correct.
Yeah. Did you?
No, I'm thinking about the Pardes,
right.
Pshat, Remez,
That's
Drash,
exactly
and Sod.
It. Okay, so you know.
Yeah.
This was my suspicious, because I know what you are speaking about.
Correct.
But, you need, actually what you are saying, you need kind of base, and you are building on the base that you have. You cannot start learning Kabbalah without any...
Correct.
Right.
And you'd say, in essence, reality is layered.
Right.
The story I told you about you running around and work and you don't notice,
yes.
And then when you stop, you notice a whole lot more in the same reality. That hasn't changed, but your awareness of your surrounding changed because you were noticing something else. There are levels of understanding for the Kabbalah that allows you to get into deeper and deeper layers of understanding, where at the very depth of it, there are the secrets of what makes this universe sort of work, operate.
So would you, some might call, I don't know if this is true, but would you call this sort of, the study of Kabbalah is the study of God, or just the study of our existence and relationship with something other? How would you kind of?
The answer is yes. The main, but the main is to really understand God, is to really get to a close understanding of your relationship. God is within you, and how the essence of God affects you.
If we will speak about the beacon of God that we have in our own soul from the beginning of the creation, then maybe the Kabbalah is how you are taking the beacon and are making a bigger enlightenment for your own.
That is correct in its essence of what you're saying. If you're familiar with what's called fractal patterns, fractal patterns are little patterns that repeat themselves and larger and larger.
Yes.
So if you look at the entire universe is in you, and it's got all the elements right in there, and
it's
your body
us.
Is a representative of the entire universe. The entire universe is a representation of something larger that we don't have a concept of. And so you are correct in that the study of yourself is also the study of God. The study of God is the study of the universe and yourself. So.
Yes. And people who embark in this study, I know that you would think that there would have to be some kind of an inner change that you would undergo if you take this sort of as a long-term study.
I mean, yes. So this is this is not the Kabbalah. This is me. It helps you. You deal with life where you're walking 10 feet off the ground. You're not 200 feet off the ground where you're not connected to reality, but you're slightly above it and you can see a little further than just your own height. It allows you to get a wider breadth of where you are and where you're going. And it's sort of, shock absorbing, the things that really, if you're hitting on the ground, you really feel that impact. You don't feel it as much because you can see on a wider aspect of it.
I like it. The question is, sometimes you need to react now.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
When
and that's
you
where the
are,
balance is, correct?
So exactly.
That's why you're not 200 feet off the ground.
Exactly.
You're only 10 feet off the ground or five, whatever.
Yes.
You know, something that is, you're not too far off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But those... those impacts you see on a larger scale. And so every day, every action that you do has a far-reaching meaning. And it's not like the moment is against you or the moment is for you. There's a lot more effect than beyond the moment that happens to you right now. And what you do matters every day, every moment.
I wonder if you want to let our listeners, and by the way, it's 603-816-1590 if you want to jump in at any time. If you want to let our listeners know, now you mentioned that, we mentioned that you are teaching groups and facilitating classes.
Yes.
Where do you do that? You want to let people know how they can jump in and join one?
Absolutely. The classes are once a month, and they're alternate between Temple Beit Einu on off of Amherst Street and Temple Beth Abraham on Raymond Street here in Nashua. Beit Einu that's in Merrimack, not Amherst, right?
Oh, Amherst.
It's in Amherst.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right next to the Walmart, the other side of the Walmart parking lot. And it's usually set in small groups. It's got to be under 10 people, otherwise you would not participate, and you have to participate. You have to, it's an experiential thing, so it's in small groups, anywhere from sometimes two up to as many as 10. But it really has to be that small of a group because everybody has to participate, and we learn together. So we pick a book that we all are interested in, and we start reading it together, read a paragraph, and then talk about it. And we don't move from it until we all are saying, all right, I feel it or I understand it.
I do admit I come to your classes and I really enjoy them. And it's true, you can't. Sometimes we don't get even past a sentence or two. And, you know, we get into a discussion that could last an hour on over a sentence or two, and you know, it's very deep. It's very profound. So
I enjoy it as well.
would you like people to get in touch with us through Israel is Real if they're interested in joining
the class? That'd be great, or either of the temples. They have on the calendars when and where that is, so that would be the best way.
Okay, so that's Temple Beth Abraham in Nashua and Congregation Beitenu in Amherst, or you can contact Eitan Zaira here through Israel is Real and join a class. It's very worthwhile. And have been any final words? I wanted to say just the idea of the Pardes, the orchard, when you go in, I know there's some stories about that, and some of them come out okay and some of them don't. The nature of learning the Kabbalah, is it to really stay connected with another, to learn with another person, or would you recommend just reading on your own?
It's best to learn together, because as you and I know, that we can get ourselves into a tailspin, or, you know, you start thinking about something and it sort of gets you somewhere where another person, another soul, basically balances that energy. And so it's a very good thing to study together. It's very helpful for yourself, for the other person. You build up on each other's imbalances and sort of complement that. And it also it gets you motivated. So when we meet, we study. If you say, oh, I want to read, it's very hard reading. And so sometimes you take a book, as you said, we work on a sentence for an hour. If you did that on your own, you'd read that sentence, you don't understand it, you're done. You're not going to pick it up again. And so it helps both yourself and the other person to study that. And so it's a matter of taking two or three people and getting together and starting to read a book together and study it. And there's a lot of resources. You can Google now about anything, right?
Excellent. I want to thank Eitan Zaira for coming with us and being a facilitator of this wonderful subject called Kabbalah. And again, you can get
thank
in touch
you.
With Eitan through Israel is Real. Thank you, Eitan.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
And we're going to finish up with our Parashat HaShavua, our Torah portion.
And this week's the parasha, the Torah portion, is Mishpatim, laws. And the Torah tells us, 6 days shall you accomplish your activities, and on the seventh day you shall desist, so that you will be refreshed. Shabbat is one of the foundation of Jewish belief. Shabbat is the most important institution in the Jewish faith. The sages go so far as to say that observing Shabbat is the solution to all the world's problem, as the Talmud teaches us. If all the children of Israel would observe one Shabbat properly, then Messiah would come immediately. The importance of Shabbat is evidenced by the fact that Shabbat appears in the Ten Commandments, which is the seminal creed of the Jewish people. Many people openly say, okay, I keep the Ten Commandments, I do the basics, I'm a good person. However, one who does not keep Shabbat is only observing 9 of the Ten Commandments. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. And we're Rachel.
And Sonia.
This is Israel is Real. Our theme song, Hinei Matov, is by myself, Rachel. You can visit Rachel at www.rachelmusic.net. RAHELmusic.net, and be sure to come to the concert tomorrow night at the Jam Factory. We're on the air every Friday at 10 to 11 on radio WSMN 1590 AM and Nashua's News and Talk, and on the internet at www.wsmnradio.com. We thank again our guest, Eitan Zaira, and you can contact him by contacting us at www.israelisrealnh.com, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Alive.
Israel Lekor.